Hello, this is Tom Campbell, host of a series of interviews with local band members and music industry professionals from the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. Today's interview is with Peter Huntington May. Joining Peter for this interview are Dave Burgett and Phil Birdall from the Stillroven. Hello, this is Tom Campbell. Today is November 14th, 2015, and we're talking with Peter Huntington May today. And also along with Peter are two members of the Stillroven, Dave Burgett and Phil Birdall. As always, we start our interviews with the same questions. Could you please state your full name, your date of birth, and hometown, please?
I am Peter Huntington May, Eden Prairie, Minnesota. Date of birth is June of 1939, June 5th, 1939.
Where was your hometown?
Well, it's been in about 20 different cities, so we'll just go with Eden Prairie now.
Dave.
David William Burgett, October 6, 1950, and I currently live in Edina, Minnesota.
Your hometown, Dave?
My hometown is Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Phil.
Born and raised.
Yeah, my name is Phil Birdall, born June 28, 1947, in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Peter, you've done a variety of jobs in the music business over the years, and let's start with your history as a DJ. When did that start, and what was your first station?
It started in 1965, and my first station was in St. Peter, and I still can't remember the call letters. I was there for a very brief period of time, then went to Mankato. Then from Mankato, I went to Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin. Then from Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin, I went to Liberal, Kansas. Then from Liberal, Kansas, I came north and went to, I can't remember. I went to WDGY, I think. I got busted out of there, and I went to El Paso, Texas. Then I got another break, and I came up, and all this while I'm living graciously with my parents between these gigs. You know, I'm a young single guy, of course. I think I got a break and went to KDWB, I think, at the time. This is after that horrible adventure in El Paso.
What happened in El Paso?
Well, the guy was a nice enough man, but he didn't have any idea of the radio business, and he bought an AM station that was such a wreck. It had two broken Magna quarters, about three microphones. It had a Gates yard for a board, and it had no production room. And it was also a daytimer, which makes it particularly tough. He brought me down to program the thing. Well, he didn't even have any records. So it was a pretty gruesome deal. And he had an engineer that would come in, but he was like slow learning Turner. And it was just really, really difficult to have this thing set up, you know, to play contemporary music. Now, I don't know how contemporary it was going to be when we eventually got her done, but I wasn't going to hang around to find out. One rainy day, a strange rainy day in El Paso, I left, and I just couldn't get out of town fast enough.
You call that a daytimer? Does that mean it only broadcasts during the day?
Mm-hmm. So sunrise to sunset.
Okay, that was unusual for that time?
Or? No, because I bought one up in Duluth and learned how to lose my butt. But
what was that station?
That was called K-Best, and KBXT was its actual call, and it was the best damn oldie station you ever heard in your life. It was just a screaming mother. Man, it was a good station. But that's a whole other song and dance.
What era would that have been, Peter?
1982, I think.
Okay.
82 to 86. Yeah, we were right on First Avenue there in just outside of downtown. I still love the city of Duluth, but at the time it was in a horrible recession. And, I bought the thing, and then I also finagled an FM license. So now all of a sudden these guys that own the FM stations up there are scratching their heads, and they're going, this knucklehead got that FM franchise for Duluth? And this is big business we're talking, but we're also talking big investment, of which I didn't have a dime. And the reason I was even able to buy this station is my dear, sweet, departed mother left me $24,000, mm-hmm. of which I parlayed into this deadbeat radio station. And but boy, we had a good staff and a good sound. God, it was great.
So you turned it around.
I sold the FM franchise off, and yeah, I turned it around. In fact, we had a number one book in the first book we were out. And
What do you mean by number one book?
We were number one in 25-54 in
that age group.
What's the
ratings? Demographics?
Yeah, what's this rating service I'm looking for?
Arbitron?
Yeah, Arbitron. But after that, she settled down, as almost all oldie stations do. Yeah, but you're still above mediocrity, and you still can sell your product. And I had several faithful followers in terms of clients, but it wasn't enough, and it wasn't, you know, it was a really tough time in a cold city with a really bad economy at that point in time. In 82, I think you would find that Duluth was about as low as it could go.
Were you an on-air personality in Duluth, too?
No, I just did morning news, and I worked with a really pretty good guy. God, I can't think of his name, though, who was the morning disc jockey or morning host or whatever you want to call him. But I did that just to get my butt out of bed so I could get into the workday. And so I basically was off at 9. I worked, I think, 6 to 9. Because there is not what you'd call a huge drive time in Duluth. I mean, you know, you can go from point A to point B in that town pretty quick.
Let's talk about WDGY a little bit. When you were at WDGY, what time period was that, and who was the manager?
Well, the manager was a guy named Dave Franzen, an awfully nice guy. And I worked with people like Steve Wynn. And
Bill Deal?
Yeah, Bill Deal. God, I worked with a lot of really old... Steve Wynn, I think, is still up in Fargo. He's up at one of the major stations in Fargo, just as an old antique. Let me think. Who else did I work with?
Scott him? Burton?
No, he came in much later.
Later.
Yeah, and that's, in fact, after they moved their studios out of downtown Minneapolis, went out to their transmitter building, which was a good move for them to do. And at this point, Doors, I think, still owned the station. They found themselves encumbered by Coma in Oklahoma, WDGY, Twin Cities. I think there was one either in St. Louis or Kansas City, that I can't remember the call sign. FM coming up. And now these are 50,000-watt AMs, and they just, you want a power bill, try a power bill on a 50,000-watt AM radio station. And so they're running three of these guys with declining ad revenue. So that's why they moved out of the beautiful downtown offices and put us out what at that time would be about 90th and 35W in Bloomington. It was absolutely the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, it was actually between 102nd and 106th.
Okay.
Right off the freeway on the west side.
Yeah, and where the tower farm was there, where the nine towers were. Yeah, yep. Is that where...
So you actually worked out of both buildings?
Yes, sir, I did, yeah.
Downtown Minneapolis Bloomington,
mm-hmm.
both?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now we're in the mid-60s sometime here, or what time?
Yeah.
Mid-60s.
I'm guessing, yeah.
And how long did you stay at WDGY?
Well, I think you get fired on every gig here. I mean, that's just like being a baseball manager. You know, you last until, or no, it's even better, like being a hockey manager or a hockey coach, whatever. You get just fired at the drop of a hat. I don't know. I was probably there 9 months to a year. I can remember my dear old dad. God, he used to, he was a guy that, you know, worked like 40 years in one gig, like Phil Birdall here. And, and you know, he couldn't understand it. I'm going in and out of these gigs. Yeah, you're just...
Loser.
Oh, God. Well, we haven't talked about Portland, Oregon yet. We haven't talked about Miami yet. And we haven't talked about San Francisco yet. So, I mean, I worked a lot of good markets, but it's way too complex for me to untangle now.
Well, let's talk about KDWB a little bit. Were you at KDWB after WDGY?
Yeah.
And who was the manager at KDWB?
Yeah, Dean Johnson, yeah. And... and Sammy Sherwood was the program director. And Sam went on to fame and fortune as the guy that opened up AM weather radio at the old WWTC site. That was a goodie. I worked with Trudon Blue and myself and a fat kid named Sammy Sherwood.
Tack Hammer?
Tack was a good friend of mine, yeah. Yeah.
What was Tack Hammer's real name?
Tack Hammer.
That was his name?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And I went to his funeral on Lindale Avenue at the Cremation Society. Every self-aggrandizing son of a bitch in radio was there. They got a chance to speak. Well, it was the most disgusting display of, hey, I'm available and I'm really good. And holy shit, I had to leave. I mean, I left. I mean, I just tipped my hat to old Tack. And I mean, it was really, really, I'm trying to think of who I was with. I think I was standing with Sammy Sherwood at the time.
What was the difference between KDWB and WDGY?
Sammy made you prepare your shows. You had to have almost everything written down, which was, in a way, if you were not very bright or not very able to ad lib, okay. I mean, it could take an okay disc jockey and make him pretty damn good, but it also could take a pretty talented disc jockey and make him pretty bad. Because it's really a load to sit and write out a 3 or 4 hour show every day. God almighty. That station did pretty well. But I got unloaded from there. Oh, and then I went to work for Buzzy Bennett. Yeah, at KCBQ in San Diego. And Buzz at the time was the hottest program director in the United States, or one of the really hot ones. Oh, God, I haven't taken in Hawaii yet, have I? Have I mentioned Hawaii?
No, didn't mention that.
I got Coral and K-Poy and KGMB in there. Somewhere. He was one of the best program directors I ever worked for. And then I went across the street to KGB. Why, I don't know. When, I don't know. And I worked for Charlie Van Dyke. And Charlie is still in Phoenix doing freelance voice. And this guy has got a voice that just comes out of a well. It is so deep. Oh, unbelievable. He was also a good programmer. And I worked with Machine Gun Kelly and people like that. And let me see, I'm trying to think of some of the other guys. Oh, Bobby Ocean, who was one of the real, real best guys. God, he was good. Oh,
what station was he at?
He was at KGB. And then Bobby went on to KHJ, which was the heavyweight in Los Angeles. I was at, where the hell was I at that time? I think I was up in Portland. I was up at Kissin'. I was working at Coil. I don't know, for some reason I was in Omaha at Coil. And Don Burden owned Coil and Kissin, and they transferred me from Coil to Portland and flew me out there on a moment's notice and put me in the air shift of a guy named Tiger Tom Murphy, who's still in radio. I think he's up in Seattle. So all of a sudden, this is the most colorful deal ever. Don Burden's got a 1,000 water that he runs so hot, a 24-hour station, that they have a supply of what they call driver tubes, which are tubes to power the transmitter. He's got them stacked up, and they're like $500 each. He's making so much money. This thing is in the middle of a swamp, but it's actually in Washington State. So you have to take a boat to get there. And when I started there, it was flooded. And so the engineer had come pick me up in this rowboat, and we'd row across this flooded plain and tie up the actual transmitter and studio was up top of this old farmhouse. And Christ, there's water running through the bottom of it, and you tie the boat up to the stairs, and it's steep stairs going up to the second story. God, and this is a true story. And I'm trying to think of the name of the engineer. Gosh, he was a nice guy. How he put up with me for all those. And then they worked you. Oh, 6 hours a night, in nonstop. It's just six days a week. So, but it's a different 36 hours than it is like working 40 hours at a grocery store. I mean, it's a really demanding deal.
What hours did you work at WDGY?
I worked midnight to dawn, and I also worked, call me a liar, 7 to midnight. I had one really good shift when Franz had hired me. And then when they moved out to the studio and got new people and stuff like that, they changed my shift. So I worked midnight to dawn. I think I was pretty happy to leave there, actually.
And what about KDWB? What was your hours?
I worked 9 to noon. Oh, and had a really good show, yeah.
You were an on-air personality?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, every day.
And at both KDWB and WDGY?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And you know who could tell you a lot about this? You know Curdy Lundgren, don't you? Kurt Lundgren? Oh, you got to get him on. God, is he a colorful
guy. Who is he?
Well, he's now a record collector, but he worked with me at CCO FM, and he also worked at CCO for a short time. And he is of the era of well, himself and Carl Lensgraf and Tom Ambrose and that ilk of disc jockeys that were in the Twin Cities at the time. And that place was run by Paul Stagg, was as a program director. Was God, he was just... Some of the stuff is just so silly.
So you're working as a DJ in all these stations.
Absolutely.
In the 1960s, and this is...
No. In the 60s and the 70s, I'm skipping around. Hell, I'm in the 80s, the 90s.
Right.
I mean, I've still got KS95 and CCO-FM working for Chuck Knapp. No, it was at KS95. He was the program director.
So during the 1960s, you're hearing... The second decade of rock and roll music, obviously the 50s was the beginning of rock and roll. What did you think of rock and roll music, personally?
I loved it, but I hated some of it. Absolutely loved it, but I hated stuff like...
The schmaltzy kind of stuff?
Yeah, or the stuff like Herman's Hermits. Which I remember I just despised. And I had, in those days, you had like a 30, and if you were really lucky, maybe a 38 song playlist. And you just grind this stuff. And every time you play it, you go crazy and you're saying these nice things about it. And you're absolutely hating this music. And I'm trying to think of some of the other stuff. God.
Well, if there was a song you liked, did you have the freedom to play that song over?
Never. Never. Not in the structure of the AM stations that I worked for. In fact, at WCCO-FM, Kurt Lundgren, the guy I previously mentioned, was the music director, and he was awfully good, but the station itself was awfully weak. I mean, it should have done much better, and KS95 just kicked its ass every book, every time you turned around. It was just killing the place.
So all of these radio stations that you worked at, was there one station in particular that you enjoyed working at more than the others?
KS95. Because by that time, I'm in my, well into my 30s, and I'm doing news. And I'm doing fill-in disc jockey. But I've got this regular news gig. I don't have to deal with Chuck Knapp, I don't have to deal with him, and John Mayasich was the general manager at the time, the hockey player, and he was easy to get along with. So I was as happy as a pig in cotton, and then I bought a KBXT, and KBXT, by the way, which was KBest, was a destroyer that had been retired or scrapped during or just after World War II, and I didn't know that the FCC had that kind of longevity of information on the call sign. It's tough to find a call sign that has any remnants of rhyme or reason or anything.
The call sign was used on a ship in the Navy?
Yeah, in the U.S. Navy, yeah. Huh. That's what I was told, why would I fib? I don't care. I was happy to get it because you could then make it KBST or KBEST and then just use that at the top of the hour as your break, It was KBXT is... KBest, Duluth Superior, you're on to another tune.
So the program directors would pretty much set the songs that were to be played, and nobody was really allowed to stray from those song lists.
In those days, it was very, very rare. It was very rare.
Okay.
That's all I would say. So you had a real restricted list, and that's why they published those dumb things. I'm sure you've got them in your...
Well, WDGY started out with the top 50,
yeah.
Then they went down to 40.
Yeah, and top 40 was usually it, but of that top 40, 30 were really played, and the other 10 were what they called up-and-comers and stuff like that. You might get to play one tune per half hour from that bottom 10, or even just one tune an hour, and the tunes, were 2 or 2.5 minutes long, at the time. So it wasn't like they were, eating up a whole bunch of clock.
Now, WDGY and KDWB were both known for putting on a number of different promotions and contests and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Do you recall any of those in particular that stand out in your memory?
It was so funky back in those days that I remember one at KDWB where you could call anywhere in the world on KDWB's dime and had a huge response because it was really difficult, A, to call and hugely expensive, and people were trying to call relatives in, Egypt or Finland or someplace like that. And at WDGY, I don't really remember anything. Then you had your typical car giveaways and, all that stuff where you had to be so stupidly lucky to win one of those things, you may as well go to Las Vegas, But yeah, that's the one I do remember because I thought it's the dumbest contest I've ever heard of, and it had such great response. Just people were dying to talk to their relatives in faraway lands,